Hi, I'm Hannah.
Hi, I'm Rochelle, and this is BoxBox F1 Pod. Today, we are going to be doing our pre-Austria round one, and now it's time for our digital roundup.
So, we had some amazing videos released this week. Red Bull and AlphaTauri, their drivers, so Max, Checo, Pierre, and Yuki, all arrived in Austria and went on a little adventure wearing Lederhosen in traditional Austrian clothing. And they look like they're from like the 1800s, and they went on a boat. And what are those cars called? Off-roading?
Massive trucks. I don't know. I don't think people generally off-road, and like they look like military grade, like where you transport prisoners. They were giant.
So anyways, they had a little welcome to Austria and shot a funny video, and it was just so nice to see these drivers like off the track and get a little bit more of their personality. And it just confirmed for me my love for Yuki, because Yuki was so cute in his little Austrian outfit, and he was so excited to be there, and I love watching him row a boat.
They barely rowed it, but yes. yeah, I agree. Yuki was adorable. Him and Pierre make a good
best friend.
For some reason, they look like the little siblings.
I think Pierre and Yuki are slowly but surely becoming best friends. And yeah, I agree. The way they interact is really cute, because they're not like, they're both a little bit more reserved, like on, you know, especially on camera, like they're not like fully joking with each other. But Yuki's just being genuine, and Pierre like cracks up because he finds Yuki to be the most hilarious person ever. And Yuki's not even trying. And another video, before we dive into this one, that preceded this Austria video, it was Yuki and Pierre sitting across from each other, teaching each other French and Japanese. And one of the questions was, how does a dog bark in Japanese? And Yuki said, I don't even...
Wang, wang. Pierre lost his mind.
Yes, and Yuki said... They do, right? And Pierre's like, no, they go woof, woof. And Yuki says, no, all my dogs go wang, 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 wang.
I mean, I know what Yuki means, because in Russian, dogs bark guff, guff. You've never heard a dog go guff, guff before, but like that's how dogs bark in Russian. I also think that any like reservation in their friendship is purely probably like a language barrier, because like if they both spoke the same language, like fluently, like if it was their first language, then I think they would literally be best friends forever.
Well, okay. But Yuki is obsessed with video games. So frankly, and Pierre, I mean, I think he does play video games sometimes, but it's not even close to the level of Yuki. So...
We cracked the code as to why he performed so well in Baku.
Yuki could not bring, or he, in such a mature manner, chose not to bring his PlayStation to Baku because he had a race to do. So he has zero distractions. And it proved to be very good for him, because he did so well in that race. And so I hope he learns his lesson that he should not bring his PlayStation with him to every Grand Prix.
You know what? Because he stays up till like the wee hours playing. Obviously, who's going to race well when they're half asleep? That's probably why he keeps crashing into the barrier.
But he's just growing. We love to see Yuki's growth.
Yes, we do. And I do love their friendship a lot.
Me too.
And this video was the trip through Austria was very cute.
It really did look like The Sound of Music. It was so scenic. There were mountains with fresh pine trees.
Well, they started in Salzburg.
Yeah. And like the water, like when they were on their little wooden boats, it was such a scenic, sunny day. When the Red Bull and AlphaTauri drivers get to Austria, they first get on their wooden boats, and Of course, Red Bull turns it into a race, even though they're literally there to relax and enjoy Austria. And Max and Checo start going really fast on their boat and steal the keys, I think, to their cars, which was their next section of their little adventure.
Well, they didn't just go fast. They cheated. They were told not to just row and not use their engines. And the first thing they did was turn on the engine. So they cheated, like, from the first.
Red Bull is ruthless and will win at any cost, even if it means screwing over their own junior drivers.
No, so they, like, literally zoomed in and out of the water, picked up the keys, and it took, like, Yuki and Pierre, like, 20 minutes longer. It was sort of reflective of what happens on the track.
Yeah, I took a screenshot of Yuki standing on the boat looking confused as to what's happening, which I also feel like is emblematic of his random crashes on the track.
Then they milked some cows.
Yeah, and Yuki tripped over a bucket full of milk or something like that. I don't know if it was full of milk, but he walked backwards and tipped over a bucket. I hope that wasn't the milk that Checo just spent all this time milking a cow for.
To be fair, they laugh every time Yuki does something. I feel like he's just, like, great comic relief.
I'm obsessed with Yuki.
Same. He did a little karaoke in the car. He was just chilling while they're driving through Austrian terrain, singing Japanese songs. And Pierre was laughing, as always.
Yes. I'm so glad Pierre gets the humor.
Yeah. Anyway, the video ended with them eating schnitzel.
So that wrapped up the Austria adventure. So we're glad that Red Bull and AlphaTauri had a great big welcome. On the other hand, McLaren released their first video of Lando and Daniel doing something fun and jovial together, or so they tried. They did a snack wars, which is pitting Australia's traditional snacks for Daniel to introduce to Lando, and then traditional, like, British snacks for Lando to introduce to Daniel, and kind of scored them. Daniel was so critical of everything, even the Australian snacks, but especially of the British snacks. And these are not like necessarily gourmet. They're cookies.
They were the same snacks under different names, basically. And they were eating the same things.
Yeah, but this wasn't like a freshly baked cake, you know, like critiquing. It was like just they opened a box of Tim Tams.
It's like Oreos.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, imagine picking apart an Oreo.
Yes. But okay, so when you say he was critical in a, like, he was critiquing like a food critic. Exactly. He wasn't like grossed out by everything, but he was going into intricate detail.
He didn't really like a lot of the stuff.
Yeah, but to me, Lando seemed more grossed out by every Australian thing. He was like, meh, this is fine. Meh,
yeah.
Whatever.
Well, let's just say they first started out with Vegemite.
Okay.
So, fair. And then they ate Tim Tams, and then Lando kept saying, is it a penguin?
It is.
Yeah. So, they're the same. So, thankfully, they have something in common.
Well, I mean, almost all British and Australian snacks are everything they ate.
Yeah.
Was pretty much identical. Like, this is a cookie with jam. This is a cookie with jam. This exactly. is some chocolate. This is some chocolate.
Lando just kept looking at Daniel as Daniel was critiquing the snacks and kept giving him the side eye. Lando said Daniel was trying to be like Gordon Ramsay because he's just like,
He was like, so the jam tastes a little artificial, and then if you bite into the cookie, it has a bit of salt in there. Do you taste that hint of salt? And then combined, it creates this combination of flavors. And Lando was like, what?
Should I play a clip?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, play a clip.
The shortbread is, like, salty. It's, like, it's very fine. Like, it breaks away really easily. And it's like, it tastes like powder, but powdered salt. I'm not Gordon Ramsay over here.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So you see what we mean?
I quoted that almost like verbatim.
You really did. But yeah, it's just like the intricacy.
And there's nothing wrong with what Daniel's doing. Like, he took the assignment seriously. He's like, oh, we're eating food? Let me describe it to the viewers.
Yeah, whereas Lando was just there to eat some snacks.
Yes. And it was just different vibes.
Exactly.
They just don't go together.
Yeah. And then it got even weirder at the end because there was a Kinder Egg.
Lando, like, opened the Kinder Egg. He's like, do you want the toy? And Daniel's like, no, that's more your age group. And then he proceeded to put the toy together and spin it around the room.
Yeah, he was like, actually, this toy is cool. Another thing I really liked was there was a chocolate orange, you know, with like the orange slices that break apart.
Yes.
And Lando goes, this is a delicacy. And then he smashes it with his fist, which I know
Have you ever opened one like that?
No, not like that. But that makes way more sense because when I tried to open it like daintily, it was kind of difficult.
My brother would just throw it against the wall.
Then it just goes on the ground.
Well, it's still in the foil. No, he throws it while it's in the foil. Oh,
yeah, yeah. That makes sense. But yeah, trying to actually peel it apart like an orange, I discovered, is not the move. You have to smash it. But I just found it hilarious because he in one second says it's a delicacy. And then how you eat that delicacy is by literally punching it.
Also, did they not make it to Australia? Why don't they exist there?
I'm sure they do. But this is also like a chocolate orange. I mean, I do think many people have had them, but it's kind of a situation where you would never buy yourself a chocolate orange. It's just there somehow.
Yeah, you're right.
So I can imagine for some people, if they've never come across one, like being offered to them, it's just like, okay, well, I mean, it's not worth buying. I got one in my Christmas stocking. And I was like, okay, yeah. Then. Cool. I'd rather have a Sephora gift card, but okay.
We always got them for New Year's because for Russian New Year's, you give gifts. And I got $5 and the chocolate orange. And I was like, this is shit.
Now you should talk about the Red Bull Ring.
Sure. It's not that exciting. So it used to be called the Zeltweg Airfield Circuit. Then it got renamed to Österreichring and existed from 69 to 95. Then it became the A1 ring, which was built in 1995, and it basically converted Österreichring to a more modern and shorter circuit. And then it got renamed to Red Bull Ring in 2011. It's a weird circuit. It's only 2 miles long, which I think is weird for non-city circuits. It's half the length of Paul Ricard. It has a few long straights. There's uphills, then obviously there's downhills, and there's a few sharp turns on the downhills. So I guess that's what makes it fun and different. But yeah, that's the ring. It's pretty straightforward.
As our pre-Austria GP episode, we're going to tell a dramatic, or Rochelle is going to tell a dramatic story.
Gentlemen, a short view back to the past. And the past today is going all the way to 2002, where we found ourselves in Austria and witnessing one of the biggest scandals Formula One has ever seen.
Dun, dun, dun.
And shocker, shocker, it surrounds Ferrari when Ferrari tried to manipulate things to their advantage, which they are iconic and we do not question their methods, but they like a bit of manipulation here and there. So this was when Michael Schumacher was still racing, and his teammate at the time was Rubens Barrichello, which sounds Italian, but it's not. He's from Brazil. And Rubens was on pole, which is exciting for him because he's only won one race in his entire career. It was like 2 years before this. So about halfway through the race, Ferrari starts yammering onto the radio for Rubens to let Schumacher pass so that he could win. And he kept refusing. They did this like through literally half the race. They're like, let him pass. And he was like, no, let him pass. No, we don't have Rubens's side of the radio.
It was Schumacher like right behind him?
No. So basically they needed Schumacher to win for the points, I guess. And then in the end, they kept being like, he did this for the championship. He did this for the championship. But he kept saying no, basically. And at the time, the team principal was Jean Todd. who is currently the FIA president. And he was there is a clip of his side of the radio where he's literally shouting and let him pass. And he kept saying, "You shall not pass." Just kidding. He didn't say that. But he waited until they were literally you could see the checkered flag. And then he did an abrupt break to the point where almost fully stopped in the middle of the track. Which I guess because people couldn't hear the radio at the time, or at least their two-way communication necessarily, he was making it very clear that he was being forced to let Schumacher go.
And I love this little drama queen.
I know. Schumacher clearly was not, did not sit well with him because he had made such a blatant display of it. I think the idea was that it'd be a bit more subtle and they could just pass it off as oh, he slowed down. But that's not what happened.
I have one follow-up question, which you might not know the answer to. But
yeah, what?
Why did Schumacher have to win for the points? You mean they wanted him to win the driving championship for the Constructors' Cup?
Right. So I never understand this, because remember this happened with Hamilton and Bottas, where they were like, we need Hamilton to win to get more points.
In that situation, because I remember that episode in Drive to Survive where that happened, I assumed, because I didn't get a clear answer, so I assumed it's because Hamilton, of course, was in the running to win the Driver Constructor Cup. So that's what I just pieced together. But I don't really know.
I thought so too, because then they get the World Championship and the Constructors, but they all keep making it sound like the driver with the more points is better in terms of the constructors, which doesn't make sense because
It just goes to the team.
Yeah. So I honestly don't
explore that more, but
yes,
it's just it's a team sport, people.
I know, it's ridiculous.
Especially I feel it's unfair from what you're saying in this 2002 race that Rubens guy was on pole and seemed like he could win himself. And I think that's really unfair. I get if you're maybe fourth and fifth, and that fifth driver does have the potential and pace to get more ahead. You want them to do their best then. But if the first driver is actually has the better pace, just let them win.
Yeah. And the thing, he was way ahead of him. And it was also weird because he was never going to contest the world championship from Michael Schumacher. Michael Schumacher, he only won one race. So far, Michael Schumacher went on to win the world championship with more than double the points. Why they couldn't let him have this win is just really weird and just mean. Then at the podium, Michael Schumacher, I don't know if this was a PR move or if he's actually nice about it, but it didn't come out that anyway. So he gave the trophy to Rubens and let him stand on the first place podium.
What?
Which,
so he's acknowledging that he shouldn't have won. Yeah.
Well, he did eventually in the press conference. He's like, this is just a tactic that came from above. This is what we do, but it's necessary for the championship.
But how weird to be Rubens and be so I'm gonna step up here then.
Yes, literally. And he had to stand there. So he said that, so after that, they go into the podium press conference, and he said he was late because he was rage puking.
He said that?
Yes, he's like, I was so angry I started puking and couldn't stop. It was
have you ever done that?
No.
I've been so nervous I puked once.
Yeah, but I've never heard
so of mad.
Same. I've never heard of rage puking, or it sounded like it was not one time. It sounded like
he's just like, this happens to me weekly.
yeah, it was really weird. So they got fined. Him, Schumacher, Rubens, and Ferrari got fined $1 million by the FIA for messing up the podium
ceremony
protocol. Yes. Not
that's
for the
switch. So stupid.
I know.
That's all just for PR. There's literally no consequence in messing that up.
FIA loves their rules. And then, speaking of rules, they next for the next season, they put in a new rule saying they weren't allowed to do they banned team order. And team order is that practice of the whole team where the team gives instructions for a driver on who should go ahead, basically.
But they do still do that.
Right. So what ended up happening, they've realized as the year went on that that was not a feasible rule to enforce. Right. Because what ended up happening is that they just like didn't blatantly say, let him pass. They would say things like, oh, looks like he's a little faster than you, or it looks like he's got a bit more pace. Let's see what he can do. So they ended up scrapping that rule, but I guess the polite messages stayed. So like it still happens.
Yeah.
And when I was reading about it, they were like, it's no longer really used to manipulate the race, but it's used to secure points. And I'm like, isn't that the same thing?
Yeah. Well, okay. I don't know how that rule is written, but I do think it makes sense just like in a common sense way, where if you're telling a driver that they need to like cede their position to their teammate, out of common courtesy, you should tell them why. Like say, your teammate has faster pace and we really think they can get ahead. Like just on a human to human interaction, I don't think it's very polite to just be like, go slower so they can get ahead. Like you should kind of explain yourself a little bit. And I don't think it's that hard. Like, of course, the only reason is because they have more potential because they have a faster pace. So just say that.
Yeah, but it still sucks. Like that wouldn't have, like giving a reason isn't going to make Bottas feel better.
No, but at least then they have to kind of say yes though. Whereas if you're just like no reason, just cause, then it's just like, well, that's why I think Rubens was in the right to be like, no.
He probably wanted to rage puke in his car, but that would have jeopardized everything.
It would have. But yeah, anyway, so that was the story.
That's a very good story. And yeah, we should definitely look more into team orders and team radio, because something that also came up in conversation this week is when Bono tells Lewis it's hammer time, one of our listeners said, what is that? And it simply means it's an all-out lap, like pedal to the metal or whatever.
We talked last week about trophies, and so there's a lot of stipulations for the trophies, like what they look like, how much they should weigh, because sometimes drivers are too weak after a race to lift it up. So if it's too heavy, that's happened before. They literally could not lift the trophy. They dropped it. But one of the stipulations is that it has to be shaped like a cup. But obviously we've seen like a bunch of them, i.e. the monkey, not shaped like cups. So apparently the way people interpret that rule is that there just has to be a big enough crevice to drink champagne from, which in the monkey's case is the mouth.
It's a gorilla, which I think is key.
Sorry,
gorilla. Bigger than a monkey. How much champagne can go into that gorilla's mouth?
Not a lot, but apparently it's enough to suffice the rule
stipulation. It's like, okay, if half an ounce of champagne can go into a crevice.
I mean, remember the Louis Vuitton one?
That was in Monaco. I guess that entire Louis Vuitton container. But because it is, it truly is a case. But that is weird. That trophy itself doesn't have a crevice because it's the Monaco track
outline. Unless it's hollow and you can drink it from the like gold bit.
I mean, is there a hole on the top? No, I think they must interpret it as you must pour the champagne into the Louis Vuitton. Or on the bottom, where the like the plaque is, you know, there's kind of a ring. Maybe that's hollow and you could drink it from the bottom of the Monaco track. It just seems like really unnecessary to, like, do they don't actually drink anything out of the trophy. So it's like, why is that a rule?
Of course, when you have the traditional trophies where it is like a cup, I could see how, you know, if you're really amped up, you would want to drink out of that for like fun. But you don't need to require they do that. It's more of a spontaneous gesture.
Wait, do you remember when Daniel Ricciardo would do shoeys?
Yes, a lot of people did, but yeah, Daniel especially, like, they put I guess there's a tradition where you pour the wedding champagne into your shoe, like literally
that
into
was Daniel's your shoe. Tradition.
But no, that's so disgusting because shoes are, even the inside of shoes are dirty because then like your feet are gross. And how can you drink something that tastes like feet?
I don't, especially at 2 hours of sweating in that shoe driving. They drink it out of their like track boots.
You know what would be a great drinking shoe? A Bottega tire boot, because it's so durable. Even if you dropped it, it would contain all the liquid.
That's what you want out of a shoe cup.
It has so much tread. No fall could wear it out.
Did you see who was in a new set of boots this week?
Yeah, they're steel-toed.
Yes.
It's like, why? Why do you need a steel toe?
In case someone tries to run over his foot.
His feet are so much more prepared than any of us are in life.
I know.
One of our favorite listeners requested that we discuss the wives and girlfriends, aka WAGs, of the Formula One drivers. Which, of course, we've been following, but we've never really brought up in depth. So, let's start with the GOAT. Jerry Howell, otherwise known as Ginger Spice. She is the wife of Christian Horner, and they have ginger children.
Yes, and donkeys.
And donkeys, because they're posh AF. I mean, Jerry is incredibly put together.
Yeah, Jerry always looks good. My favorite scene is still that one from Drive to Survive where Christian's like, my job is so hard. Like, I travel so much. And Jerry looks directly into the camera and she goes, really? You travel a lot? You have early mornings? Cool. Because she was on a much more strenuous schedule. They had like a new show every night, right? It's not like week by week.
Yeah, and she had to learn dance routines, work out, look good. Christian just is behind a bunch of graphs. He doesn't even have to really do anything. He just travels. And Christian's never learned how to do a dance.
But yes, she's a baller.
Yep.
We love Jerry.
And then, similarly, another goat, Susie Wolf. Wife of Toto Wolff, and Susie is a badass because she is a Formula E team principal.
Yes, and before that she was a test driver, I think.
Yeah, for F1. And so I love that Toto is like attracted to like someone who is also into racing, because I think like race, you don't really see a lot of like couples who are both into racing. Like the typical WAG is like a model, honestly, like at this point, or like someone more into like the fashion side of things. But yeah, Susie's the real deal. And in an interview with Nico, Toto mentioned that he often discusses with his wife the debate of nurture versus nature. I'm like, how often? Like, is this daily?
On a regular basis. Me and my wife always sit down and say, so nature versus nurture, thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, Toto's incredibly intelligent, but in a way that's like still really charming. So I feel like I could somehow get roped into a conversation about nature versus nurture with Toto, but in a way that's not pretentious, like just genuinely, like kind of like joking about it and then like somehow getting into a long discussion. Hopefully not more than once a week, because it's just like, okay. I mean, that is a debate that has lasted centuries. So I'm like, you know, there's no conclusion. And what's the point at a certain point? It's just like people are the way they are. And even if you do explain it, it's like, okay, well, did that even help?
No.
But the point is they're both incredibly smart and dedicated and serious about their work, but also I think they seem like great people.
Yeah. I was also gonna say, in that interview with Nico mentioned that because Toto was in Monaco to support her race, and Nico was like, the announcer said, like, showed the camera to him and said, Susie Wolf's husband. Yeah. And then he goes like, how'd that make you feel? He's like, here I am, Susie Wolf's husband, blah, blah, blah. So yes. Toto accepts his role as like the trophy husband at certain times. Yeah.
Because Susie seriously has so much credibility.
Yeah, she's very
cool. Like, she is her own person for sure.
Yeah.
Honestly, Christian should be introduced as Ginger Spice's husband. And then many people, you know how many people would be dying to know that information, but probably don't follow F1 enough to even know. And their shock and amusement at that statement would be a lovely surprise.
Agreed. I think they should just call him that from now on. Mr. Ginger.
Yes. Mr. Ginger Spice. Okay. Now, I think you should intro the next one.
Jean Toad, who actually looks like a toad, is of like 75 and has been partner sounds like they're playing ping pong. His mm-hmm. life partner is Michelle Yao.
I want to say Yao. What were you going to say?
Yo.
Oh, it is Michelle Yo.
But why is there an even? God. But anyway, so they've been partners since 2004. And if you don't know who she is an actress, a Malaysian actress, best known to me. I think she was also a Bond girl, but most recently known for Crazy Rich Asians. And I thought it was exciting because I was not expecting to see her on the track. I was also not expecting to see such a beautiful woman holding Jean Toad's hand. And also, I was like, wow, she's actually crazy rich. So that was exciting for me.
Okay, let me intro the next one.
Okay.
So, Kimi Räikkönen, the stoic Finn, who never says anything very favorable. He is absolutely enamored and in love with his wife. I don't know how to pronounce her name, but it's spelled like Mintu. And he posts about her constantly on Instagram. And I just love the contrast between his usual self, which is very basically silence. And then he'll just post something so nice about her, just like love of my life and things like that. And even though I don't know that much about her, I love his love for her because that's where he shows like, I mean, it shows, like, this is his number one priority in his life, like, his wife and his children.
His Mother's Day post. I know this is a phrase in Europe, yeah. But it's so funny to read. Happy Mother's Day to our yummiest mummy in the world. Like, okay, so yummy mummy is a phrase in England.
No.
It is. Yummy mummies are, like, the, like, MILFs, basically.
Yeah, I mean, let me just read a few of the top comments on that post. The thought of Kimi typing this is universe bending. Oh, and then people were like, I don't think Kimi controls this account.
She posted laughing crying emojis.
Yeah. I actually do believe he posts that because I actually think he is completely just like floored by her on a daily basis, which I find that so sweet. Okay. Our next wag is actually, we only discovered her because they're super incognito. So Carlos Sainz's girlfriend is Isabel Hernández, and they barely have any social media posts together.
Can I describe their vibe?
Yes.
Okay, so you know that couple that like, when someone starts dating someone, but they're trying to be like cool on social media, but so they won't post like a legit couple photo. Instead, they'll post like a picture of like a scenic photo, and then you see like the back of someone, or like yeah. They'll post like little like stories, and like you see a glimpse of some of like yes. A shadow of someone. That's what they remind me of.
Okay, you know what that reminds me of though? When you're like suspicious in not like a relationship, but like either of an ex-boyfriend or someone you're kind of seeing where you're not fully sure, they leave these tiny little nuggets where if you're like a psycho girl, which essentially we've all become to know who Carlos's girlfriend is, you go on these rabbit holes And now, thankfully, the internet has presented her to us through articles, through these types of investigations. But yeah, it's like you find these little Easter eggs, like you see a strand of girl hair in Carlos's post and you're like, okay, who is this bitch? And then you end up spending 12 hours finding who was tagged in what, and then going to the mutual friend's Instagram to piece together the puzzle. And it's like that meme where, you know, in Always Sunny, where Charlie has like the red string and he looks like he's on drugs, like pointing to all their red string. Yeah, it was basically that situation where you would never know upon looking at their profiles that they were dating. But if you are, if you're a great girl detective, you just know what to do.
That behavior, I don't limit it to ex-boyfriends.
No, anyone. But you have to have some vested interest. It's not like a, like, of course we're invested in Carlos. Okay. Kelly Piquet, Max Verstappen's current girlfriend.
Kelly Piquet is, really into F1. Her brother was an F1 driver. I think her family's all in F1 somehow. And she first made her romantic entrance into the F1 world via Daniil Kvyat, who was a former Red Bull driver. He got her preggers. Then Max Verstappen showed up, stole Daniil's seat in Red Bull, demoting him to AlphaTauri. Then he stole Kelly. And I guess the baby, I never see, this baby must speak a lot of languages.
So Kelly is Brazilian, but
they speak Portuguese, right? In Brazil?
Yes, they do. But does she live there?
No, she lives in Monaco.
Yeah, which means so the baby would have to speak French.
But her first language is Portuguese. So that means, but then her and Max must converse in English because she doesn't know Dutch.
Right. The good thing is their brain is malleable. And this is the best time to learn languages. I mean, it's very common to learn two languages, obviously. And like, I guess the baby brain can master that. But five? I'm like, how do you keep track of what word belongs with which language?
One time I was in Italy and I attempted to say a sentence in Italian. But unfortunately, every language I like half knew came out, and I think I said a sentence that had Italian, French, Spanish, Russian, and English all in like one sentence. I feel like this is what the baby sounds like.
I mean, I assume they're taking that into consideration. Like, Dutch can go.
Yeah, no, she doesn't need the Dutch.
English makes the most sense because in terms of practicality, like, okay, so Kelly and Max and Daniel, they all speak it, but also like for the baby to know English is crucial. So I would hope they're emphasizing English. And then the other stuff like Portuguese and Russian, of course, is good for like family, but I would hope it's just limited to those three. And that seems manageable for a baby.
Agree. She can do three.
From one like high profile couple to another, I think we should go straight to Charles Leclerc and Charlotte Sign.
Uh-huh.
Because they post a lot.
There is no doubt that they are together.
Okay, this is a personal thing for me. I just really am a bit uncomfortable when couples look like they can be siblings.
I mean, Monaco's not that big.
Right. They're both from Monaco.
This is what Monegasque people look like? Like this?
Yeah, so they're both like brunette with like hazely-ish eyes and look abnormally symmetrical and have incredibly charming smiles and just look perfect. And I'm just like, what is in the water in Monaco where they're giving birth to these people? You're quintessential Gen Z couple.
Yes. That's also, I really, she seems very sweet. And I also like that she's at her age. Like she seems
We got to talk about her shoe line.
Oh.
She just takes Nikes and puts marker all over them.
She's Gen Z.
Yeah, I mean.
It's as Gen Z as you get. I actually, she seems very sweet and nice. Like, I feel like she would be fun to hang out with. But she does seem very young. Before we move on to the next one on the list, we've skipped Bodice.
Yeah.
And I just want to mention, so first of all, apparently Bodice has been married before.
No, he went through a divorce?
Yes.
Why has he gone through so much strife in his life?
I don't know. I feel bad that we were so hard on him now. He's got so much personal and professional trauma that he carries with him on a daily basis.
I hope people don't take our criticism seriously, because we switch back and forth every week between loving and hating people.
Yes. And really, we love everyone. We just have a lot of opinions.
There's certain weeks. Okay, I will say in our defense, when we were being really harsh on Bodice, it's because he wouldn't let George through in Imola. And also, like, he made it really hard for Hamilton go through, even though Hamilton had better pace. So I think we actually had good reason to be hard on him, but we do not need to do that anymore because everyone's hard on him.
Yes, that is true. Yeah. And at some point it's like, enough is enough.
Yeah, we need to stop because he needs all the support he can get.
Yes. Poor Bodice. But yeah, so he was married to a Finnish woman. They got divorced because of complications with the job. And now he is dating Tiffany Cromwell, who is an Australian cyclist.
Wow.
And last week, did you not know she was a cyclist?
Mm-mm.
Oh. So in case anyone else doesn't know, just look at her tan lines, because she has the most extreme bike short tan line I've ever seen. It was caught in one of the photos of them entering the paddock last week. And it was, she even reposted. She was like, oh my God.
I'm glad we got to Tiffany, because I'm just glad that Bodice is finding love.
He has happiness somewhere in his life.
Yeah, like, I respect that she's an athlete, because I'm sure she, like, gets the competitiveness and, like, somewhat, like, of what he's going through. Okay, next on our list is Lance Stroll's girlfriend, Sarah Pagliarelli. What you first need to know is that they kiss a lot.
And post it. They're not like a kiss, like snapshot, like Charlotte and Charles have a little too often. But like there's videos of them making out.
So yeah, like we don't know that much about her, but they just have a lot of PDA. And I hope she goes to their family dinners.
Friday night dinners for...
I said, do you think they eat poutine every Friday?
I don't know. It depends if they mix. I feel like they're not that Jewish. They probably do eat poutine.
Lawrence disowned his Jewish name.
Lawrence Strolovich. Yeah.
He hasn't had a latke in decades.
He could make poutine latkes, and then it's mixing his cultures.
Fusion leads to confusion. That's what I was told.
By whom?
Gordon Ramsay.
Didn't realize he was so purist.
Well, I mean, no, I think right. when fusion is done well, it's acknowledged. But, you know, 90% really of the time, it's really fucked up.
Yes,
agreed. Like, you just messed up both cultures and now we're all offended.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see you guys in a few days for the first Red Bull Grand Prix.
Woo. Well, we're going to probably release our episode a day or two after.
Someone decided to go on a vacay.
Well, I know our listeners are just twiddling their thumbs waiting for our episodes to drop. So I just thought they just
refresh.
Know.
They refresh Spotify.
Right. Like, every Sunday, they're just waiting every hour. But no, I have to go live a life.
I'll be here waiting for her to get back.
But you're holding down the fort. Everyone's going to be like, well, did you guys not have an episode? And you'll have to field every question we get.
Lovely. My favorite part of the job.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys soon.
Box, box.
Box, box.